You're listening to Live from Lord North Street, a podcast from the Institute of Economic Affairs. I'm Kate Andrews, Associate Director at the IEA. And today I'm joined by the self-proclaimed freedom fighter and the state-proclaimed Chief Secretary to the Treasury, Liz Truss, MP. Liz, thanks for joining me.
Great to be here, Kate.
So to start and to get it out of the way, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about Brexit. Perhaps not the favourite topic to discuss, but I want to ask you, going forward, are we going to get something that remotely looks like an independent, free market Brexit? Are we going to be allowed to reap the opportunities that could come through more free trade deals around the world? Or are we going to get something that resembles a customs union or another institution that means that the EU will still set our tax and regulatory policy?
I think we need to fight for a Brexit where we do have control of our own destiny. I think that's what people voted for. And that's where the opportunities for Britain lie. It's not going to be easy. I think we've got a very difficult situation in Parliament at the moment, but I do believe that is what people want, and that is where we'll eventually get.
There are liberal free market merits to a softer Brexit, but it doesn't seem like a softer Brexit is being considered for those reasons. If it were, you think that would have been discussed 2.5-3 years ago. So compromise is good in theory, but in many ways, the softer Brexits we're now talking about seem like the worst of all worlds.
I think the problem is that what people are talking about when they're talking about a softer Brexit is essentially rules being applied to Britain that we don't have a say over. I think that's fundamentally a democratic problem. And in the longer term, what I would like us to get to is a Canada-style free trade agreement. And we need to work to get there. I don't think we can be in a position of being a rule taker from the EU.
And you think that first step is to get out of the EU, thus supporting the withdrawal deal as it stands now?
Exactly. I've always believed that whilst the withdrawal deal isn't perfect, it does give us the opportunity to negotiate that type of deal in phase two. And that's where we should focus our efforts. And we also need to make sure that we are preparing Britain's economy to compete with the rest of the world, that we're doing all the things to improve our levels of growth, giving businesses more freedom to succeed. That's really important in order to prepare for that type of Brexit.
So we've got Brexit out of the way, so deep breath out. And now we can talk about things that I think are actually on the public's mind a lot more than the nitty-gritty of the Brexit negotiations. The tax burden, for example, is at a near 50-year high, and very few politicians, and certainly no political party, are talking about this in a meaningful way, and what a real outrage it is. Do you think taxes in the UK are too high, and where specifically would you cut from the tax regime?
I would like to see lower taxes. I think we've got particular issues with stamp duty, with income tax. I believe that taxes should be as low as possible while still keeping excellent public services. But we need to focus on the core public services the public want rather than some of the more extraneous items that are often favoured by vested interests and lobby groups. And as to the tax burden, the particular issue we've got in this country is we haven't seen the economic growth that ideally we would see. So I think our number one priority should be raising economic growth. That is the best way, first of all, for everybody in this country to feel better off, to have more money going in their pockets, but also to be able to fund public services while still being able to lower taxes.
And that is about tax, but it's also about regulation, isn't it? And many people accuse Brexiteers, certainly, and when they talk about leaving the European Union and its red tape, of making irresponsible cuts. But we've seen lessons over in the US of booming economic growth there. Part of that was the Republican tax cuts, but part of it has also been a new approach to regulation and being easier on business, trying to work with them rather than against them.
Yeah, and I've been over to meet the head of regulation in the US to see what they've done and what they're doing. And in fact, one of the things they've done is used the UK approach of the one in, two out, which keeps a lid on the burden of regulation. But yes, they're looking across the board at what affects business. And I think in this country, we've got 305 different regulators and quangos. They cost £2.5 billion. We need to look at making that landscape a lot simpler. I'm not saying we don't need any regulation, but at the moment, It is complicated. There are areas like utilities. We've got lots of different regulators. They've grown up over 40 years. We need to look at a much simpler system of regulation. But the number one regulatory issue in our country is the planning system. There's no doubt in my mind. And in fact, you know, we've done analysis at the Treasury show that's the number one piece of regulation which is holding back economic growth. And you know, people are less likely to move to work than they were 15 years ago. There's been a 25% drop in labour mobility. If you're a young person looking to move to the place you could earn the best wage, you're going to struggle at the moment because people are paying, renters in London are paying 50% of their income in rent. So to me, that is the number one regulatory issue we need to sort out.
I feel like when you talk about the planning system as a regulatory issue, it puts it in a really different light. Because when you talk about slashing red tape, people often view that as a scary thing. Like you want to lower food standards, you want to lower medical standards. But actually, it's the red tape that affects all of our lives on a day-to-day basis and keeps costs high. Do you think we have a language problem? Do we need to be talking about making free market changes in terms that people can understand?
I think we need to be talking about removing the barriers. So for example, I visited a builder in my constituency, a guy called Tony Abel, building houses. He told me about how a dispute between two different local government authorities on the size of a pavement, whether the pavement was 4 metres or 2 metres, had held up building development by 6 months. And if you think of that type of thing happening across the country, you know, entrepreneurs, businesses struggling to just get things done because of these very, very detailed regulations. I think that's what a lot of people struggle with. And I think many people who run enterprises say to me, that is the problem. It's just it's wading through all that stuff. Nothing in particular is a massive problem. It's all of it and feeling that you're fighting the system in order to be able to do something good, which is, you know, improving your own life, improving the lives of others, providing, you know, services and goods that people want to buy.
So, Liz, you're in charge of the spending review coming up this summer, and I know you've been travelling across the country getting feedback from a range of taxpayers about how they would like to see their contributions spent. But shouldn't this exercise make us reflect on whether or not the state is best placed to spend other people's money full stop? Wouldn't a cash top-up system or just letting people keep more of their own money be better than having the state determine what their money will be spent on?
Well, what I'm doing in this review is going around the country and meeting people in their places of work. So far I've been to a yeast factory, I've been to a saddle factory, I've been to a factory that produces mozzarella cheese, all kinds of things. And the idea is that quite often in Westminster, we tend to meet the lobby groups, the big companies, the people with a vested interest in some particular part of public spending. And what I wanted to meet is taxpayers, the people who are going to work every day, paying out money to pay for these services, and really give them a list of all the things we're spending money on and saying, as a taxpayer, which of these things do you want the government to spend money on your behalf on? And which of these things don't you want the government to be involved in? Are you quite happy to do that yourself? And those are the questions I've been asking people. And I will use those views to help shape what the future of the spending review.
So there definitely is an interest then in finding out from people what they actually just don't think the state should be spending their money on.
Absolutely.
What do you think are the top spending priorities and what would you like to see cut?
So, I mean, what people have told me, and I agree with a lot of what they've said, you know, areas like education are important priority, policing, defence, transport. One of the things that I am a great believer in is we need to give people the means to be able to earn a living, whether that's making sure that the country has got a proper fibre network, not necessarily provided by the government, but the government does set the regulatory framework, you know, making sure that people can get the journey to work, making sure children get a good education. And then we should allow people the freedom to decide how they use it, to be able to set up businesses, to be able to go and work for companies, etc., etc. So, you know, to me, those are the core priorities which need to be funded in a spending review. And there are other areas. We currently spend $18 billion on support for businesses. There's a question in my mind about Would those businesses prefer to see better fibre or roads for them to deliver their goods? We spend $34 billion on housing at the moment. And one of the reasons we're paying so much for housing is because the cost of housing is so difficult to afford for people. So what we've got is people are first of all paying for housing in terms of their own rent or their own mortgage payments, but they're also paying through the tax system to subsidise housing for other people because the houses are too expensive. So if we sort out the planning system, if we build more homes, we'll save the government money, we'll save the taxpayer money, as well as saving, you know, the public money themselves. So those are the types of opportunities I'm looking for, how we can get better value for money.
Strawberries and cream was in the news not because people are excited about the summer season and the tennis tournaments that come along with it, but because it's the latest treat under attack from public health representatives and advocates.
I think it's ludicrous that, you know, products like butter have been marked out as banned for advertising on the tube, or products like strawberries and cream have been marked out as somehow wrong and, you know, children shouldn't see them. This is completely against what most people in Britain think that authorities should be doing. People want the authorities to be providing basic services. They want them to be, you know, making sure our country is well defended and we have good policing and we're dealing with criminals. They don't think people that eat strawberries and cream are criminals. And I think it shows a group of people who are really out of touch with what the public think.
It's also quite worrying that policies like the sugar tax, which have not proved successful to reduce obesity anywhere in the world where they've been tried, are being flagged up as the solution to serious issues like childhood obesity. Is this just a box-ticking exercise? Is this yet another policy to make people feel like the government is doing something, but in reality, they're not tackling the harder issue, the fact that, you know, people need to get up and move more, kids need to run around more?
But the problem is when you say that the government can solve all of the problems in society. Government can do a certain amount, and the government has a key role in setting regulatory frameworks, property rights, you know, making sure markets work. But ultimately, you know, we can't infantilize people. We have to allow people to make their own decisions about their own lives. And the idea that the government can just wave a magic wand and achieve things is nonsense. If you look at what's happened with Nicola Sturgeon and introducing a minimum alcohol price in Scotland, actually alcohol consumption's gone up. You know, there are all these dietary advice in the 70s and 80s telling people not to eat fat. Mm-hmm. It didn't actually solve any problems. So I think you've got to be very, very careful about trying to micromanage people's lives. The way we're going to become a better society, the way that we are going to be a better country to live in, is give everybody the freedom about how to live their own lives. You know, some people will make mistakes. Some people will make bad choices. But I would much rather be in a country where people have the freedom to make bad choices than a country where you're banned from doing things. Who wants to live there?
Do you think that there's an issue with trust in government at the moment? And that's wide-ranging from government policy or public health reports saying that, you know, very, very small glasses of wine or beer are bad for you, to the utter chaos that unfortunately we continue to see across the political spectrum when it comes to the big topics of Brexit. People feel like their potholes aren't being closed up, that their housing is way too expensive, that their local transport is breaking down. And yet the answers they're getting are to ban more things or more chaos. I mean, is there an issue of trust here?
I think there is an issue of politicians over a number of years claiming they can deliver everything, and that is just not true. Politicians and governments, you know, need to be there to deliver core services, but they cannot fix every problem. And sometimes the desire to get rid of risk from everybody's lives just means we create more problems, that we don't allow people to make their own choices and own decisions. And I think we need a genuine conversation about what government should do, and also what local government should do. Some of those problems you were talking about, like potholes, they should be a matter for local government. Those taxes should be raised locally. You know, central government should not be sort of sitting in judgment to fix every tiny problem in everybody's lives.
Do you think more power needs to be devolved regionally and even locally?
Definitely. I think we're a far too centralised country.
What would you...
But the ultimate devolution is to the individual.
Oh. Yeah,
ultimately, it is. Ultimately, it's people who are best placed. You know your life better than anybody else. Why should somebody in Whitehall or even somebody in your local authority know better than you about the decisions that you're making? They don't.
Why is there such a desire in politics? And again, I don't think this is specific to political parties. I think you can find it in the Conservative Party, the Labour Party, really across the board. Why is there such a desire to consolidate power? Why isn't there more trust in the individual at the moment?
I mean, the reason that I became a Conservative is I hate being told what to do. And I got frustrated by the system trying to do that. So I specifically came into politics because I don't want an overweening government that tries to control
people's lives. They're trying to tax your Coca-Cola.
But I do think quite a lot of people go into politics because they do want to tell people what to do. I think that's a reality of it. I think there's a kind of know best attitude. The idea that people know best, that there is a group of experts who can tell everybody how to live their lives. And I think we've got to move away from that. And I think one real thing that's happened over the last few years is social media has democratized things. It's given people a voice right across this country who previously hadn't been heard. So I think it's rebalanced things away from people who have got access to media outlets. You know, everybody can broadcast from their own bedroom now or their own office on Lord North Street.
Or Parliament, as you do, Liz. You're very active on Instagram, making up your own hashtags on Twitter. So you know, there's a lot of debate at the moment about whether or not social media has been a force for good or evil. I tend to think all of these innovations are more or less better for us than worse, but it has flagged up some real questions about how we treat each other and what people are willing to say when they're not face to face. Are you worried about any of that?
I mean, look, there are some nasty things that people say on Twitter, but previously we had a political system where people felt their views weren't being heard and aired. I think it's 10 years now since the Gillian Duffy incident with Gordon Brown, and she raised opinions which he considered to be unacceptable. And I think there was a real disconnect between what lots of people thought and what was actually happening. Now, through social media, many more people have been given a voice, and I think that's a good thing. And some things are difficult, some things are offensive, some people find them, but I'd rather live in a free country where people are able to express their views than one where, you know, the state is censoring them. I think that's completely wrong.
I agree with you. I think it's been really positive for young people in particular that, you know, you don't have to have a certain job or job title. You can have a platform and you can put your voice out there totally off your own back. But young people are not polling at the moment to be in support of free markets and classical liberalism and liberty, at least not when it comes to many of the policies that they support, like renationalizing the railways and, you know, some pretty big state policies that young people seem to be on board with. But you're making a face, and I think you're making a face because are you trying to suggest that young people are more classically liberal?
So a lot of recent polling research suggests that young people are in favour of lower taxes than older people. They're more in favour of public service reform than older people. They are more keen to set up their own businesses. There's been an 85% increase in 18 to 24-year-olds setting up businesses in the last 3 years. So a very, very entrepreneurial generation. I think spurred on partly through developments in the internet like YouTube. You know, so many people have got a side hustle of a YouTube channel. It's much easier now to make yourself heard, to start something up in a way it just wasn't possible 20 years ago. Yeah, I think it's a very free generation. I just don't think it's necessarily connected with that's what a free market economy looks like. And the reason that you can set up your own YouTube channel is because we live in a free market country where these things are permitted. So I'm not sure the connection's necessarily made, but I think fundamentally there is a generation there who are freedom minded and who we can reach out to. And you know, you were saying about nationalisation. If you look at the polling about why people support nationalisation. The number one reason is they want to see accountability. Well, I want to see accountability as well. And I think there are private systems that have better accountability. So, for example, Japan has an entirely privatised railway system. The train and track is run by the same operator. They also have the land, so there's an incentive to build houses and create more housing supply. 33% less public subsidy than what we've got in Britain. So we need to address the underlying concerns, but it's not because everybody under the age of 25 is a Marxist. It's because they're frustrated by the current accountability problems in British railways. So we shouldn't mistake that for being a card-carrying member of the Communist Party.
I broadly agree with you. I think...
That's good to hear.
I think... How often do you hear that? Is that common feedback?
Only from you.
I broadly agree with you. I think young people, in terms of their lifestyles and the way that they live, which is what you really should look at, are more classically liberal. But there is a huge disconnect. I don't think it's minor. I think it's really quite massive.
I think it's vital that we project a optimistic, aspirational vision of Britain, that we say that modern Britain is a great country to live in, it can be even better in the future, and that we don't look like we're regulating and banning the very lifestyles that people are enjoying. I think it is possible to win people over. We need to show that we've got a really good vision for the future, which is like what we've got today, but even better.
So you are optimistic that people out there, young and a bit older, actually are more supportive of these free market ideas than polling would obviously suggest.
But we need to talk about the ideas. And we haven't talked enough about the ideas. We've talked about the results of the ideas, the fact that, you know, if you change the planning system, you create more houses, or if you cut taxes, that's good for business. But we haven't explained why that's the case. And I think this debate about ideas is really important, and that's the way you've got to appeal to people.
So to finish off, I want to ask you a few rapid-fire questions, Liz. Are you ready?
I'm ready for this.
You sure?
Yep.
Okay. You have to answer quick. It's got to come from the heart. Libertarian or neoliberal?
Libertarian.
Canada or Norway?
Canada.
Hayek or Friedman?
Hayek.
Cats or dogs?
Cats.
Deliveroo or Uber Eats?
Deliveroo.
Bleecker Burger or Five Guys?
Bleecker.
Game of Thrones or Line of Duty?
Line of Duty.
Instagram or Twitter?
Insta.
Evening gown or power suit?
Ooh, power suit.
Last one, first female president of the United States or first female chancellor?
First female president of the United States.
All right, all right. Well, 2020 is coming up. Who knows? You might get your wish. Thank you so much for joining me. This has been fascinating and an absolute pleasure. For more blogs, podcasts, films, and reports, visit our website at iea.org.uk and subscribe to our channel on Apple Podcasts.